All right. Pumped to have you here in the store. This is our first episode in our store in on Bleecker Street in West Village in New York. And this episode I'm really excited about because Blake, I've known Blake for almost 15 years. He's really the reason that I got into e-commerce initially when I was – we both went to San Diego State. And it's funny that we're in New York right now, but I was wearing a New York Knicks shirt.
Sure.
And I was get ready to play basketball, and he stops me and he goes, "Oh, you're from New York?" I'm like, "No, I'm actually from Washington State, but I'm a Knicks fan."
Fake Knicks fan. Fake. But we're a Knicks fan today. Game seven.
Game seven. We're going later today. But and then we became friends. We joined the same fraternity at SDSU, and when Blake graduated from San Diego State, you know, we all got jobs. I got a job at an advertising agency. But Blake went the startup route, and he was working for this company called Movement Watches. And it was really instrumental for my career to see Movement have success, because it gave me a good reference point to believe, oh, I could do e-commerce too. And yeah, there would be no cuts without Blake, for sure, because I wouldn't have just known that I could do it. So with that, Blakey P, one of the founding members at Movement Watches and also a good buddy of mine, was in my wedding and one of my best friends. How you doing, brother?
Happy to be here. Honored to be here, man. Thank you. It's always good to relive those times when I was going back to you and all our friends, and I was like, if we could do this, if we could start this company and build a massive online business, anybody could do it. And I remember you were unhappy in your job. I think mm-hmm. you had just gotten laid off.
Yeah.
And I told all of our friends this, and you were the only one that took that action to actually make that happen. So super proud to pass the baton to you, and you guys have taken this to whole new heights. So super happy to be here, man.
Yeah, awesome. Well, kind of taking a trip down memory lane, what do you think was instrumental in you being a college grad and getting a job at a startup?
Being willing to work for no money, to be honest, because when I was starting with Movement, I was working a real estate job on the side that was paying me also a shit salary. But Movement started as a side hustle. I was like one of the first people working on, I was the first marketing hire, and they didn't have any money to pay me. It was like a few hundred bucks a month. Mm-hmm. And I was willing to take that to have a creative outlet and also learn and potentially grow with the company, although that did not seem possible at the time. Mm-hmm. And right place, right time, you get in somewhere where you can make an impact early, you reap the rewards down the line. And so I think being willing to work for almost no money, improve myself and learn, that in itself was probably the biggest factor. If I wanted even 70, 80K a year at that point, they wouldn't have been able to afford me, and I wouldn't have had that opportunity.
Yeah, I remember when you were first working for Movement Watches, Movement had just finished their Kickstarter, and what did they do, like 700K?
200K.
Yeah,
which was a lot at the time.
Yeah.
Back then.
I remember watching it and being like, wow, I cannot believe they drove 200K with those watches. But at the time, if I'm being honest, I was like, I think this is a joke still. You know, it was right when like Apple Watch was coming mm-hmm. out, if you remember. And you know, it's always funny. I think the most humbling lessons can be the best ones, because yep. I remember thinking like I knew better, and I didn't know shit at the time. Just seeing being proven wrong that early, I think was really good for me to, as well. Mm-hmm. What was it like when you told your parents you were going to leave, you know, a more stable career to join essentially, you know, a cheap watch brand doing e-commerce at the time, which was really new in 2012, 2013, was that a hard conversation with them?
You know, my dad, I give him all the credit in the world. I'm the person I am today largely because of him and my mom. Mm-hmm. But I don't think – they didn't know what they didn't know. And even someone like you didn't understand that e-commerce was as big as it was. Mm-hmm. And I didn't either.
And will be as big.
Right.
Yeah,
and so I was very unhappy trying to chase a check in real estate and other jobs. I worked for Shark Tank for mm-hmm. Sony for a while. And I was very unhappy with all those jobs. They were miserable. It wasn't my passion. Mm-hmm. when I started working for Movement on the side, I instantly knew that was the thing that I could be obsessed with and stay up all night working on. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, along this process, I was telling my parents about that. And they saw the growth of the company too. And so I think it was an easy transition because they knew I was miserable working real estate, which your parents are like, oh, that's a great job. Get in real estate, finance, accounting, which those are great jobs. But a lot of people end up miserable and unhappy and go to work every day and don't love what they do. And when I got off my real estate job, I started working on Movement until I would pass out at 1 or 2 a.m. And so that's when I knew. I was like, I don't care what this is paying me. Mm-hmm. I love this. And I just got to bank on this becoming something one day. Mm-hmm. And luckily, it was right place, right time. It was really at the start of the e-commerce boom. And momentum started to build. And so I think they supported me being happy. Mm-hmm. But you know, earlier in my life, my dad used to tell me, like, there's no money in marketing. Or there's no money in this.
Yeah.
And I think he has grown a lot too to see the growth, just like your father.
Yeah.
I know your dad quite well because he was, you know, I love your dad, but it took him some time to see you prove this out.
Yeah.
And then the parents, they almost become like
even more into it. Yeah.
More into it and fired up, and they grow too. Even at an older age. So that's really cool to see.
Yeah. I think that's so important. One of the things you, said there, clicking into that a little bit more of just doing something you love when you're right out of college. Because you know, when I was working at the advertising agency, I remember watching you guys. I'm like, man, these guys are like filming epic content. It seems like they're playing ping pong all day in the office. Not you guys weren't, but you guys were having fun. And I was like, man, I got to figure out how to do something like this. And, what was some of those early years like when, I maybe tell the story of some, you know, you're out at a club and you guys were doing like 20, 30K a day. And that kid was like, kind of making fun of you guys. And you guys are thinking we're actually doing a lot of revenue.
The early days were, it was like us against the world, just because the perception was largely, this is fake.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That was the
and,
early.
And we, Jake had this saying, grow quietly. Mm-hmm. And we love the fact that nobody really knew what was going on and we could grow quietly. And it boxed out maybe more competition too, because nobody really knew how much money we were making. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think those early days, as a team, we got very close. Mm-hmm. We did everything together. We worked together. We ate dinner together. We went out together. We lived together. We had three different sets of roommates. And it was like, there was like six people in the company.
Yeah, that's wild.
Right? And so the company was a family, and that culture was, and the hustle and the grind, but also having fun while you're doing it, that was contagious. And I remember there were people who we brought in for interviews at an early stage. And it was hard to get people to come work for us because they didn't see it or they didn't believe it. And they'd go take a corporate job for maybe a little bit more money. Mm-hmm. When in reality, if they would have just been one of the first 10 employees at Movement, they'd be set up for their future. Right?
Yeah.
And so I think
that
was like a big thing early on. Was it was hard to get people to work for us. And then it clicks, and now you have a line outside the door for everybody wanting to work for you.
Yeah. So Blake was maybe one of the pioneers in influencer marketing. Movement in the early days was sponsoring maybe people that weren't sponsorable in maybe past generations. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about influencer marketing, there's always been athletes and celebrities, but where you guys really found your niche was the cool creator that had a big following online that was something new. I mean, Instagram was only a few years old at that time. And you guys saw like your lane to, you know, get brand awareness through digital creators like Sam Colder and some other guys like that. Tell me how influencer marketing impacted Movement's rapid growth.
I think our best advantage was that we were our own target market. Mm-hmm. So early days of social media, no brands were using this right. Mm-hmm. And we were using social media in a way that we liked consuming it, right? And so we would follow travel accounts or influencers or aspirational figures. And those were the people we said, we need to go work with these people, because the way I feel, I know I'm not the only one, right? They have hundreds of thousands or millions of followers who feel this way, but they're not the pro athlete. They're not the celebrity. Matter of fact, we worked with Devin Booker, Joel Embiid, Kylie Jenner, all these celebrities and pro athletes. No offense to that, like, great brands. None of them sold as much as the creator who might have 100,000 followers. Mm-hmm. And that was something we really honed in on because, one, it was the best ROI, it was the best bang for the buck. And these were the people that actually cared about the brand. They were wearing the watch. Mm-hmm. Where for us, if we gave Devin Booker some sort of deal, he'd be wearing a Rolex in his interview the next day. So it just was, it was a mismatch for us.
And like, don't you guys have a really funny story about Kylie Jenner and putting it on or something?
Yeah, the deal with Kylie Jenner was an absolute disaster. She, well, one, we had an exclusive deal. And about 2 weeks before that, she posted one of our biggest competitors. And this was at the time where Kylie was breaking websites. She had just launched Kylie Cosmetics. Mm-hmm. She was known for breaking websites when she posted. Mm-hmm. And so we got FOMO thinking we need Kylie to break our site, right? It's almost like no matter how much success you have, it's never enough.
Yeah.
And we thought Kylie was that next step. This is that next step to take us to the next level. So the first red flag was she posts this other watch company. I don't even know if I'm allowed to be saying this, but we're going to talk about it. She posts this other watch company and we're like, damn, that's going to take millions of sales from us.
Yeah.
Just because a lot of her followers already bought this other product. That's a competitor. Her team basically comes up with some excuse, says she does that on her own. And then there was a few more red flags. When she finally posted, it was actually doing very well. The trajectory was on point. We were seeing good ROI. Within 30 minutes, she deletes the post and says, I need to post a different photo. Because for whatever reason, she decided she didn't like that photo.
And I think one note to make is like, wait, you guys at that size, because just having gone through it, every 100K means so much money.
Yeah.
So it's like life or death.
Yeah.
And so like if something doesn't, you know, work, you're like, you could feel it in your heart that day.
We felt it and it hurt. And but then
it ended up working though, right?
I think we probably broke even on the deal.
Yeah.
It was 2-post deal, but she ends up sending us some new photos that are just the worst photos I've ever seen. Like my dog could take a better photo. We have to work with it. They're like, we're either not going to post or you're going to post these. She posts that and I'm not joking. 10 minutes before a post is supposed to go live, it was one of those times of early Instagram where they'd have bugs. Instagram was not showing. It was crashed for 3/4 of the world. So 75% of the world had a bug where Instagram crashed. And we're texting her team, we need to postpone the post. And they're like, no, she's posting. She posts it. So that's how the deal went. It ended up being okay and a huge learning lesson.
Yeah.
But after that, we changed course and we were less worried about working with the big celebrities. And we're like, where can we get the most bang for our buck?
Mm-hmm. I like the aggression to you because the Kardashians are the goats at it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think what you guys did good was you weren't afraid to take risks, but then you would also learn how to adjust. And that was a good example of that. What was maybe some of the biggest mistakes you guys made during that time?
I think that there were people on our team, and I'm not trying to call anybody out, but I think there were people that were in it for the wrong reasons. And I think there were some people that were just off the train that maybe were bad influences on the people who wanted to be high impact team members. And looking back, I think, you know, it's not a family to the point where, hey, everybody here is just locked into their job. It's like, if you're not doing your job and you're affecting the way other people are producing, you got to go. Mm-hmm. And we were in our early 20s.
Yeah.
And I think having the vision of like, who's on the ship and who do we need to win is very important. And anybody who starts to veer from that shouldn't be there, right? Somebody else might want to come in and contribute at a higher level. And so people need, you know, we want people who appreciate the work. We want people who are going to be good teammates, not step on other people's toes, and really be passionate about working for the company. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a big learning lesson, was just at an early stage, even though you might be friends with somebody or this person's a nice person, we're here to do a job.
Yeah. I think our learnings on that have been half the battle of starting a business is just getting the people on the boat moving forward, and mm-hmm. getting people that don't want to be on the boat off.
Yeah.
And recognizing when that happens. Yeah. And we've seen it from, you know, top of the organization, people that have been there forever, to people that have been there only a few months. And I think, you know, for 4 years we had like no turnover, and then we had a good amount of turnover. And I think, you know, a couple, you know, people that don't want to be there can really drag mm-hmm. the rest of the team down. And so I think we've gotten pretty good about interviewing slower. There was a time we've interviewed really fast, and then that, you know, yeah. can cause a lot of, like an avalanche of problems mm-hmm. to happen, especially, you know, we've hired, you know, a senior person fast, and that, you know, that wasn't on brand and didn't work for the business. And it just caused like a whole team mm-hmm. to have to get let go one day. Is that kind of what you're mentioning with some of the things that.
Same story. We've yeah. talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
Because cuts, you know, I'm sure you guys have gone through a lot of growing pains, and at the end of the day, we're on a mission. Mm-hmm. And you want a unit that is united in that mission. Mm-hmm. And when you're not, you're vulnerable. You're vulnerable to competition. You're vulnerable to people who are working there, maybe start to have ulterior motives.
That's so true, yeah.
And so you really, that. Really want to make sure that the pulse of the team is on point. It's like sports. Mm-hmm. When you have a bad egg on a sports team, it could really influence the other players in a bad way, right? The teams who usually win are the teams who are most united. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's so hard already as it is with just creating a brand, with staying consistent and battling the competition, yeah. that if the team's not aligned, then, you know, in fashion, we've seen, you know, you can make wrong products that then don't sell, and then you get stuck with all that inventory, and yeah. it's a real cost of doing it wrong.
Right. Those are the obvious mistakes, too, mm-hmm. over-ordering the wrong products.
Because someone on the team thinks the vision is something
right.
else.
Right.
That in reality, you know, the people that know what the brand is, it's in right. a different lane, but you might do it because, you know, you hired that person.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Or allocating capital poorly.
Yeah.
To the wrong channels or the wrong events or yeah. the wrong influencers. That's all stuff you could typically recover from. You don't mm-hmm. want to take on too much risk where you can't recover from a Kylie post or something yeah. right, like that. You still have to manage risk. But I think knowing where to allocate capital, knowing what's working, doubling down on that, and then leaving 20% for new tests and new frontiers. And
yeah.
One thing we always talked about was the 80-20 rule. 80%, we're focusing on what's already working. 20%, mm-hmm. let's experiment. Let's test some new stuff.
Yeah, Jeremy over here is running our influencer program. We were talking about that. In 22, we spent $7 million on influencers, and we were just like all gas. It was coming off mm-hmm. of like 3 years of 100% growth, yep. and just we could do no harm. And then we saw like a slight slowdown, and you know, we definitely learned the hard way that and we didn't have a good attribution, and I think that we mm-hmm. we definitely didn't follow that 80-20 where yeah. it was more like 70 tests, 30 mm-hmm. New and that wasn't going to work. Moving on to influencer marketing, that's kind of what you did at Movement. How has it changed over the years, and like what do you think's like working today in that marketing channel?
The best brands in the world get influencer marketing for free. So Cuts is an example, actually, where early on athletes and celebrities and artists were wearing Cuts organically. You guys would send out product or they would buy it. I remember mm-hmm. you hit me up and you're like, holy shit, Patrick Mahomes just bought a shirt.
Steph Curry.
And you text me a screenshot mm-hmm. and I would be like, hey, you have something special here, because people pay these people infinity dollars mm-hmm. to wear the product. And you have people wearing it organically. And so that's something that you really want from your brand when people are posting from for free above all else. When you don't have that, like Movement, we were a $95 watch made in China. We paid a lot of people to post.
Yeah, yeah.
But the number one thing was being able to attribute where sales were coming from, being able to track that, mm-hmm. and then just doubling down on the categories or the verticals that were working extremely well.
One thing I think you did specifically well, which I think was underrated in like the Movement brain trust, was like you did influencer marketing, but I think the thing people forget what makes that successful is you were really good at relationship building. So it wasn't tick for tat. You're still friends with a lot of the guys now that were working for you. And, you know, we have a method. It's like, hey, we'll DM them and let's get them on text message. And let's just be a good concierge service for some of these guys, NBA players, you know, athletes, mm-hmm. celebrities. And hey, wherever they're at, let's provide value in that way because we probably can't pay them. I think, you know, we learned that a lot from Movement where you guys were just, you know, someone that were good at building relationships mm-hmm. with those creators. And they wanted to come stop by the office when they were in town. It didn't feel like a chore.
Absolutely. I remember working in a job where I didn't really get along with a lot of the people I was working with. And so when you start to work somewhere and you can become friends with the people you're doing business with, it's the best feeling in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So the people we worked with, I was inspired by them. So why wouldn't I try to build a greater relationship mm-hmm. other than just something that's transactional, right?
Mm-hmm. What are you up to? Well, before we get into what you're up to now, you got to tell a little funny stories of like, I always say this, and I don't know if Jake would mind me saying, Jake's the founder of Movement. In the early days of Movement, I remember you guys would just buy bottles. And when I look back now, I'm 33, but I'm like really impressed. I'm even more impressed with you guys then. But it's like, I remember Jake was telling me like when you guys were going to sell the business, there was like an audit done and like you guys didn't even know how much money you spent. And it was like 370K. Tell us a little bit about like just like being 23 running a almost $100 million business and what that like journey was like. I mean, that has to be like very yeah. rare. Consumer business, 23, 24, yeah. almost $100 million. I mean, that's pretty rare.
We went out a lot and we also used that for networking.
Yeah.
So being in LA, we wanted to invite people we were trying to do business with or work with or become friends with.
Yeah.
Whether it was other people in the e-commerce space, whether it was tech companies, whether it was influencers, we wanted a way to get to know these people and bond as a team.
Yeah,
right. And so oftentimes we would be in the club just talking about watches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it would just be the six guys or when we, you know, we hired Bree. It was like the first four or five
that,
guys,
yeah.
and then Bree, who also went to San Diego State with us, came on.
Yeah.
We'd go to the club together. We'd be at our section. And sometimes we would just talk business.
Yeah.
The whole time. And so it was a good way for us to keep working outside of work too.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think everybody sometimes...
And a lot of D-gen nights, though.
Yeah, D-gen nights going a little... But at the same time, everyone who's just killing themselves, hustling, and doesn't have that balance of, like, also
yeah,
going
yeah,
out
yeah.
and have fun, you could kill two birds with one stone.
And
you go out, have fun, and still have that benefit you in your career.
Yeah, and I think, like, when you guys were doing that, you know, there's an element... I was thinking about it when I was walking here, where part of building a brand is doing things that like maybe aren't 1 + 1 = 2 that are just cool. You know, when we threw our Super Bowl party, it, you know, it was a bunch of money. We had, you know, a bunch of celebrities there. It was cool. But like from an ROI standpoint, it definitely didn't make
yeah.
us money. And we've kind of swung in both areas where
yeah.
we've done a lot of that and then done not a lot. And I think one of the things we've really learned is how important that stuff is. So like, you know, from the outside looking in, I think it's easy for me to be like spending 300K on bottles on like, you know, every other weekend in LA. That probably isn't what you should be spending money on.
Yeah.
But now when I look back kind of through a different lens, I'm thinking, hey, your target market was 22 to 28 year olds, like early in their career. And you were in LA, you guys would always shoot
yeah.
content around it and show like, hey, you can live, I think your term was live life on your own terms, which is, you were guys, that was showcasing that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? that doesn't seem like that much money now for how big you guys were. I think it was money well spent. And team bonding.
Yeah, but that was also a fluke year.
Yeah.
Because after that year, that did not transpire.
Yeah.
It became more about, hey, let's, you know, take someone out to dinner.
Yeah.
Or doing trips that were centered around work, whether it was going to conferences. And on the conferences, we'd maybe do dinners and go out and all that. But that was one year where we looked at the P&L and we're like, okay, this has got to change.
Yeah, I think we've definitely had that too.
And some nights where you look back and you're just like, okay, that was not worth that amount of money.
Yeah.
We should have just spent $15,000-$20,000 on Facebook ads instead of.
Yeah. Well, I remember one day Cuts was just getting off the ground. I was a one man show, and Jake calls me. He's like, hey, I'm taking a smaller crew out. It's my birthday. Do you want to come? I'm like, hell yeah, I'm in. And we go to this like day club, and we're there. Like, I think he spent like 10 grand there. Then we took that whole crew, like us, the girls, went to lunch, and he spent another like 6 or 7K. And then I'm thinking, all right, we're done. And it was like 60, like, no, we're going out that night. And then we like all went out, and I'm like, man, he must've spent like 30 nice. Racks tonight. Yeah. And I always say, but it was like, not that like as I got older, I'm like, I don't really do that anymore. Yeah. But I remember like just how generous Jake and the whole movement team was with me and letting me be like the little brother, kind of hanging around of, you know, whether I would call you or him on a very frequent basis, or just like getting inspired by you guys and really just asking all the hard questions to like really learn. We wouldn't be here without those kind of moments. And a lot of them came in fun environments like that.
I look back at those times and they're just such good memories. You were so obsessed with learning that it was almost annoying, but that's what it takes. Your obsession and your curiosity and the questions you ask are the reason why you were able to take the steps to get Cuts to where it is today. And all the founders out there who are trying to learn from someone like Steven, the key to Steven being where he's at is asking all the questions and not being afraid to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Nobody knows what a CPM is when they first start. Nobody knows what a CPA is when they first start. And you can't be afraid to ask people what certain things mean or how to do something. Because everybody was once in your shoes, right? You have to learn the tricks of the trade. You have to learn the playbook. And there's no, well, there is books on that now, but back then there wasn't.
Yeah.
And you should feel confident just asking questions. You don't have to know all the answers.
Yeah, and I think it never stops too. I think there was a phase where Cuts was kind of rising, where I maybe was networking quite a bit less with new people. And then last year, kind of after 22, I was like, you know, I need to like make new founder friends that are like, you know, maybe like even, you know, in the 500-600 mil range. And I think over the last year, I've got to know guys like Mike Beckham at Simple Modern, or Jeremy at Kish, and a lot of these, you know, different industry founders. And and through the podcast, I get an interview with like Jason at Hexcloud, the president. And I'm almost disappointed in myself to kind of almost forget to do that. So I think, like, you know, no matter what phase you're in, it's still super important for me to reach out to other founders and make friends, because things are always changing. You know, even why we're doing this podcast now is just trying to do different marketing strategies that are going to reach consumers in a different way. And I think there's been so much change in the last maybe 24 months in marketing in general. And kind of leading into what you're doing now, you're running your own agency. You had an exit with Movement. And tell me a little bit about like kind of what you're up to now.
Yeah. So on that point, when you get in the same routine and you're doing the same job for 6-7 years, you start to get very complacent, and you start to get this ego where
you think
you know it all.
Yeah.
Because day in and day out, it's the same results, right? Yeah. You put in the same work, same results. This is what works.
Mm-hmm.
Part of why I wanted to leave and start an agency is because I wanted to know what I don't know already.
You must have learned so much already. Oh,
you have no idea. And it was the most humbling experience to leave Movement and realize what worked at Movement doesn't work for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
And so you have to learn how to personalize strategy for each brand. And the general playbook might be the same, but at the end of the day, you don't know it all. And you have to accept the fact that you don't. And you have to rewire yourself to learn how to be a novice every time you take on a new product or a new brand, right?
I think if you're a college graduate who doesn't know what they want to do, go get a job at an agency, because you'll get experience with many different companies. And so you'll get your palate wet of like understanding, okay, maybe you work for a skincare brand, you work for a fashion brand, you'll be drinking from a fire hose. You'll be doing way too much, but you'll learn so much. And agency people, when we hire them now, they're usually like a step more organized than like the guy that just worked at one brand, because agency's kind of cutthroat. If you're not a good person, they'll get rid of you. So they really teach you like organizational excellence, versus if you hire someone from a single brand, we've seen like maybe they weren't the reason why that brand was good. It was just that good of a product market fit. Versus an agency hired, you have a better chance of success, because like there's just like they're doing so much and they're learning so much. So I think like, yeah, I mean, has it been nuts? Just how many, because you have like tens of hundreds of clients at this point, right?
Yeah. So we're still pretty boutique, and we try to do good work for a handful of cornerstone clients. We don't want to be the 300 person VaynerMedia. No offense to Vayner. That's not what we're going for. We want to do really good work. And I still have my hands on almost every account. And my partner has his hands on almost every account, right? Because we don't want to just hand you off to a smaller team that doesn't know what they're doing, which typically happens at an agency. And I always say that the agency is like AI, in the sense that you're getting all these different data points to help make your decisions.
Yeah.
You're reverse engineering what you've seen work for dozens of other businesses and clients. And so the power of that oftentimes is so much greater than just having one center data point. So I tell our team, you want to be in machine learning in yourself, right? That's our advantage as an agency, and you and your future. You have all these data points, like you said, with all these different brands to go off of, and the power of that and what you can learn in a short period of time. Very, very dangerous in e-commerce, in a good way.
Going from being a, you know, one of 100 employees to, you know, a solopreneur in a small team, what was like, what's some advice that you have for like the solopreneurs that is kind of starting that journey?
Reverse engineer everything. So if you want to figure out how to do something, you got to map it back from somebody who's already had that success. You might not have all the fancy tools. You might not have all the capital. But if you can learn how someone else got there and try to reverse your strategy from creative to the channels you're advertising on to the way you structure your business, if you soak that all in, that's going to give you the best shot at making it without all the resources that a bigger company might have.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, that's really the game of business. You know, I think Steve Jobs says the best inventors don't create, they steal. Or the quote, something like that. But yeah, I mean, it was funny. My buddy Kurt from my bachelor party had these really cool pants. And I was like, dude, those are sick, when he walked in with them like a year and a half ago. And today in the store, there are Icon crop pants that a lot of the guys are wearing here. And it was funny yesterday. I was like, oh, dude, that was like a year ago when you, or a year and a half ago when you were wearing those. And I was like, dude, can I have them from you? Because I didn't know where they were. It was from a boutique shop. And I was like, I got to have those. And we still do that all the time. That's why I love being in New York, because I'm taking stuff from this brand, this boutique, maybe this big brand, and then like curating it for the Cuts customer in a way that's like unique. But it's like when you look at any individual, like maybe product or marketing message, it may be not unique. It's the collectiveness of when you come to Cuts that makes it unique. And the same is with marketing and agency building.
Make it easier on yourself. When you try to do everything by yourself and you have too much tunnel vision, it's very hard to source inspiration. And you end up spending a lot of time and energy and money on a lot of the wrong things. If you learn where other people are spending their capital or the levers they're pulling to get to where they're at, you can avoid making a lot of those mistakes.
Mm-hmm. One thing Blake, I think, is world-class for is just brand building. So at Movement, he was the VP of brand or director of brand. I think we pulled a lot of inspiration from some of those videos in the early days. What was like your biggest like brand campaign success, and what do you think it drove that the KPIs?
The biggest brand campaign success we had was a campaign we did with Sam Colder, which is one of the creators who we really piggybacked at an early stage. And Sam didn't have as many of the followers as a lot of people we worked with, but when we did a collaboration with him, after about 2 years of producing content with Sam, every month we drop a new video from Sam, and he's wearing the watch everywhere he went. When we finally did the collaborative watch, the thing sold out in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was probably the most successful campaign we did, because we built it up for almost 2 years before we had the product that you could actually buy from Sam.
That was great.
So from content to storytelling.
And he's a beast at storytelling.
Yeah, his storytelling, his filmmaking was so incredible. And he used it as a way to tell his story.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a huge moment for him too, because he was telling a story that his life story that he hasn't talked about much. Mm-hmm. And so it was just the perfect storm, the perfect partnership. He went above and beyond to make it such a good looking campaign in terms of how beautiful the content was. And people really resonated with it, and they were inspired from it. I remember when he first submitted the video, I got emotional because it was such a touching story.
I still look at that one.
I was literally shedding tears, not just in because of the story, but because I knew the impact that was going to make and the amount of DMs and messages we got from people who were inspired by him and his story. That was almost greater than the success of the sales of the product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yesterday, we were, a lot of people were in the store cruising around, and this customer was trying on our Core Flex items, and she goes, these are similar to Aritzia's, but I like the Cuts one better. And if you look at our product in Core Flex versus Aritzia, it's very similar. Mm-hmm. And I think with brand building, oftentimes in fashion, things can be very similar, but it's what they feel when they put it on that's really the difference. And that was just a really good example to me. I was like, she's in this store, she thinks it's cool, she wants to buy it, and she's saying it's very similar, but she wants it because it's Cuts. And I was walking in the city, I was like, that's brand. Mm-hmm. That was a story. It was like in the flesh that happened in real life. And I think what you're describing with Sam is the way that video is going to impact the consumer to have them feel about Cuts. It's going to make them want to purchase it, maybe the next. And like, it was such a cool moment. I was going here, and Sean, our VP of Ops, goes, you know, sometimes we like to charge more because we're Cuts and we don't think about the brand side. And then oftentimes people are like, well, if I can get this for cheaper, I'm going to go do that. And that's an example on the other side where it's not done well. Mm-hmm. So I think like, and I was going to tell our CFO, hey, we need to have a line item that's like brand marketing, because it will drive gross margin higher. And that way, and that, maybe I'm going to sell it to him now with this story. But I think like, it's so hard as building a business, and you guys were probably there with Movement days of like, you see these big costs for things, because I'm sure Sam wasn't cheap. You know, it took a lot of time, but like committing to it is often like hard to do because it's kind of blind faith.
Right. Brand is a long-term process. It's a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're trying to get your brand identity and build all that, it's going to take years to establish that, right? It's not going to happen overnight. So I tell people all the time, you need a strategy that's direct response, that's going to drive sales now, and invest a little of that back into the long-term health of the brand, step by step.
How do you do that when you have like a new brand and not a lot of money? Like, what are some brand things you can do?
One, I think you have to have an eye for good content. It helps when you can create your own content. So like you making a podcast. We have the team here. Appreciate you guys all taking time out of the day. But at the end of the day, like, you're okay and comfortable being on camera. Mm-hmm. And you're doing that versus paying someone to be a spokesperson for Cuts. Mm-hmm. Versus that, right? And so I think that helps a lot when you're able to have an eye for what good content is. Know the trends on social media where people are going to see your content, engage with it, follow it, like it, right? Repost it, share it. And being able to do that without having to go pay a big influencer or agency is step one. We get a lot of clients who don't want to do the work. Mm-hmm. They want no part of it. So they go find an agency who can do it for them. Right. Yeah.
And I think that's so true. An eye for good content. Because there's so much noise out there, that, you know, you can always get it wrong. I always tell this story when we first started Cuts, I just said, "Hey, Brennan," he's our director of marketing, go shoot in San Diego. And we didn't plan anything. It was just bring the shirts and have the models wear them. The models were wearing the wrong color jeans, the wrong shoes. Their haircut wasn't good. And I got the images back. And I remember saying to him, I was like, "Wow, this is going to be a little harder than we thought." Because it didn't look like Cuts in my head. And I was like, "Okay, now we got to go there. We got to get the shoes right. Hey, make sure they're trimmed in the right way. And, you know, the background's got to be right. We got to think about all those little details to really craft that image, because that's what the brand is up here in my head."
Yep.
And I still have those images, and it's like, it was like rustic. It looked like kind of like a Midwestern brand. Mm-hmm. And so just having an eye for good content and content that will resonate with the brand that you're trying to make is like,
right.
It's so 101, but it's so important. And it never will not be the most important thing in brand building.
Right. And the brand building is an important piece, but it's not going to make you a huge return up front. I think it's very important to find channels that will. Mm-hmm. Meta is still the biggest advertising channel in the world and the easiest to get on and scale. And a lot of brands who are on there are not finding success. They might not have the right product market fit.
Yeah.
They might not have the right creative.
Yeah.
They might not have the right margins. And so you have to have those three things to be able to scale on that channel so you can afford anything brand related.
That's some gold right there. Say that again. It was margin, creative, and product market fit.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, before Cuts, I started a barbecue.
I remember.
And that was an example of that. It was called like Flasher Flavor. And it was some course I bought that told me this formula. And one piece of it I got wrong was the advertising cost. So I was like, "Oh, margins, you know, it's got a 90% margin, blah, blah, blah. We can sell it this." But to sell it, it cost, you know, more than the cost of the gloves. Yeah. So we ended up like shipping like $2,000 worth of these bullshit gloves to like a place in New York, actually. And they sold them on consignment. We were just like, "We need to get them out of Amazon." That's gold of like, I think if you're starting a new brand and you just like don't have any money, like buy someone else's product, set up a website and test like what your CPA is. Cause then maybe, you know, you need to create a different brand because the price that you can sell at is going to be higher because CPA is going to be higher. I think, pricing is so important.
Right. One of the smartest things you did was not pricing Cuts as a discount brand, because you would have cannibalized yourself and you might not even be here today.
Yeah, we wouldn't have the gross margins.
It's a premium product.
And then the brand content had to set up premium.
Correct.
And we couldn't do discounts every week and stuff that would damage the brand, because then it wouldn't justify the price.
And that was something where when we were chatting, when you were getting started, I thought you were pricing it too high. But that was actually one of the smartest moves you made, because you wouldn't have been able to advertise and spend the money to grow the brand at an early stage without pricing the product the way you did. And people who are getting it are happy with it still.
Yeah.
They're not complaining. Like, okay, this is a shirt that lasts.
And we built better fabrics. And correct. Like we had to build into that margin to make it right. to have value for right. customers.
Be willing to pay for an extra added experience. Mm-hmm. Even the letter you wrote to all your early customers, that's added experience. The duffel bag or the shoe bag, that's added to the experience. So people are willing to pay a higher price for a better experience.
The crazy thing yesterday in the store, remember, this guy comes in. He's like, I was walking in the neighborhood. I'm from Hong Kong. And he was like, I was one of your Kickstarter backers. Yesterday I met him and I was like, do you remember the handwritten card I wrote to everyone? He's like, yeah, I still have it. He's like, I couldn't believe you had it. And we just met him in New York like 6 years later. How crazy is that?
It's insane.
Yeah.
I didn't keep the card. I apologize.
It was funny. Like I was like, oh, 400. I think it was 436 backers we had. I was like, oh, that doesn't seem like that many. I wrote one card. Yeah. And I was like, mom, dad, like I was living at home at the time. We all just sat in there for like a week and like, It was a bigger deal.
I remember I was up in Washington with you, getting ready for your sister's wedding, where you convinced me to DJ, even though I didn't know how to DJ.
My twin sister's wedding. Yeah.
So I'm up there with the family. We're sleeping in your room. I'm sleeping on the floor. You're in your bed. And I'm tired as hell. We had been out all day. Just like, I think we were running around Washington. We jumped in the river. We had a crazy day. And at night, I just wanted to go to sleep. And you would not shut the hell up about cuts and the vision and the t-shirts. And you hadn't started it yet. But
it was like early, early, early days.
You were obsessed. And I remember thinking to myself, God, I wish he would just shut up. But God, this kid is obsessed. And he's going to win because of how obsessed you were.
Appreciate it.
And that's the obsession you want to have or you need to have. And it was natural. Mm-hmm. You just were asking question after question, sharing visions. And it was cool to have that experience with you at that early stage because I was with you for a few days. And it was all you wanted to talk about. And you were just a sponge for anyone who was willing to listen.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah, it was always good to go to the movement office. And just like, hey, what are you guys doing right now? You know, and kind of pick up little tricks of the trade. And Cuts wouldn't be here without all of that. So
I was like, he's on that juice.
He's on that juice.
He's on that e-com juice.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we found momentum in like the littlest ways, like, Patrick Mahomes wearing it for the first time. Yeah. Or I remember our first Black Friday, we did like 10K in the whole day. It was like a couple months after we launched it. And I remember I was sitting there with my dad on Thanksgiving when it's kind of started to go, and that's nothing really. But we were so excited about like just having sales and like people wanted to buy these. And then mm-hmm. like now, we've had, a ton of success. We've learned, we had some big lessons. But we still find ways to like celebrate and build momentum. And, I think it's so important just like, momentum isn't always revenue too. It's also like things like this, like having a good weekend in New York and feeling like you're building momentum on a new initiative, or having a good product development week. Like we're really excited about like these pants I'm wearing now. We're really excited about these pants, and they're like, this could generate a lot of revenue. And so I think there's so many things that will always bring you down, but like finding the light in the small things is important.
One of the most inspiring things I like to do is you go back and you listen to Joe Rogan's first podcast episode.
Oh, wow.
And you listen to how bad it was. You go to someone like Cut's account and you scroll all the way to the first few weeks of posting and you see how bad it was.
Yeah.
You go to any celebrity or influencer and you scroll and you're like, holy shit, Gary Vee was posting this? And it inspires you at an early stage of a brand or a content creation journey, because you see the people you look up to also sucked at one point.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember for you guys, early stage, you guys were hustling. You were scrappy. You and Brendan were running around doing shoots everywhere.
We still do that now.
Right. And the content was, it was okay.
Yeah. The lightings was really bad.
It was
then,
okay. Yeah. But you hadn't learned how to shoot the product yet.
Yeah.
You hadn't learned the angles. You hadn't learned the lighting or the backdrop. You had to learn how to set the shirt up, right? Mm-hmm. But at that time, you were spending money on ads. Someone like Patrick Mahomes sees an ad, gave you a chance to get in front of the right people.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes buys a shirt. Steph Curry buys a shirt. And slowly but surely, you build momentum and confidence that this could become something, right? And those photos early on, was your best content.
Yeah.
Was athletes who were organically buying the product. And it was a huge fire up. And then you slowly grow and you invest more, you learn more, and your content gets better and better. Your advertising gets better and better.
Mm-hmm.
Your podcast gets better and better.
Yeah, hopefully this takes off. I'm really enjoying it. Blakey, any last words for us?
Go New York.
We're actually going to the game here in a little bit, so we're excited.
We are the New York Knicks.
You might see us on Sidewalk NYC later tonight if they win.
If you see me on Sidewalk NYC, it wasn't me.
It wasn't him. Love you, Blakey.
I love you, bro.
Boom.